Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. This show is dedicated to the upliftment of communities, underserved communities. We come to write our history from our perspectives so we can tell our stories. And like always, we try to give you information so we can be a better community and a better people. On Missing Pages of History, for those who are not aware of our annual quarterly fundraiser raffle, join, we would like to share with you that our first one for this year will take place on February the 25th, 2017. So if you have not purchased your ticket, please do so. Also, we have an ongoing drive of our T-shirts and cap and T-shirt drive. If you have not purchased one, contact one of our members and do so, because the spring is near and we're going to be out in our communities making it a better place. But like always, Missing Pages of History has now gone to a bi-weekly program where we're going to be on 1 hour every other Saturday. We'd like for you to share the news with our supporters and your friends to tell them to come and join us. This is Missing Pages of History. And for today's program, we have a continuation from our last program. This will be The Birth of Racism, Part 2 and the Bloodlines. We'll talk about this thing, and we'd like to encourage you to call in and give your views and comments on the subject matter by dialing in at 818-337-0016. Like always, we'd like to greet and say hello to our historian and our analyst and our contributor, Emmanuel. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Emmanuel, are you there? Can you hear me, Emmanuel? We're having some difficulty. Please bear with us. See if we can bring Emmanuel in. Emmanuel, welcome to Missing Pages of History. For those who are online, listen to Missing Pages of History, bear with us. We're trying to work out some technical difficulties. Emmanuel, can you hear us? Emmanuel? Audience, bear with us. Bear with us. We're trying to find out what is going on with this technology. You know, all the time, technology is not always guaranteed. And many times we use the technology, you are not in total control of it. So bear with us, and we're going to see how we can get this program started. The Birth of Racism, Part 2 with Emmanuel. Hello, Emmanuel. Are you with us? Yes, Emmanuel. Hello, Emmanuel. Can you hear us, Emmanuel?
Yes.
Hello. Call him back. Tell him to call back. We're trying to get Emmanuel. We just hold on, please. We have no problems.
I thought you didn't need that phone.
I did.
Was
I was talking about my mistake.
What number you want me to call?
The station number, Susan.
Well, you already on the thing.
I'm not on the number, Susan. I'm not on the number. That's what's happening. That's why we're not connecting.
319-9289. That's my number.
Hello? This is Mr. Page of History. We are having problems. For some reason, on this technical number, we have a caller on the line. Caller, 3330. Can you hear me, caller?
Yes.
You can hear me, caller. Okay, caller. We have the technical problems. Tell me to get it straight. We're waiting for Emmanuel to call back. Tell him to call back. And we're going to talk just a little bit. Today, we're going to talk about the birth of racism, Part 2. While we're waiting for our historian to get online to have the subject, and again, we apologize for the technical difficulties. We'd like to have our public to call in. We're going to talk a little bit about your perception of what's going on today as it relates to racism. And we'd like to hear you talk about maybe how can we best fight it and how can we make sure not to continue to repeat this role. It seems like every 20-some years it becomes so blatant. So when we talk about racism, Carla, what stands out the most to you right now, Carla?
Well, it's funny you mentioned about cycles because it's very interesting. When you look at the rhetoric of Donald Trump's campaign that he rode all the way to the presidency, it echoes a very similar sentiment to what Ronald Reagan ran on in regards to fixing a messed up economy and this concept of making America great again.
Hello, I'm trying to get on. Hello?
Hello, we are back in control, we hope, this time. Everybody, they're having technical difficulties. They've been dropping lines on us. These are technologies that we don't control, so bear with us. So we're going to try to get started again one more time. We thank the listening audience for your patience. We have Emmanuel online. Emmanuel, what?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We can hear you loud and clear.
You hear me now? Okay.
Yes, you can.
I'm trying to do it.
So let's get started. Let's get started with this program. Today's title is The Birth of Racism and Bloodline, Part 2. We'd like to welcome our listening audience to Missing Pages of History. And like always, we encourage you to call in and share your thoughts and views with us. I dial 818-337-0016. So we're going to get started with the subject. Emmanuel, again, we'd like to welcome you. And like always, can you give our listening audience some black mini facts?
Yes, audience. The black mini facts I'm going to give you pertain to bloodlines and blood phobias. I'm going to give you at least four. And this will probably open up some centuries of the bloodline. This Holy Scripture says this: the soul of the flesh is in the blood. What I'm going to bring to you is some facts on bloodline. In the late 1600s, Sir William a mulatto man, which is called Moors in the continent of Europe, here they call mulatto, became the governor of Massachusetts. How many people know that? That's the main fact.
Can you repeat that one again, Emmanuel? That's something I never heard before.
In the late 1600s, Sir William Phipps, a black man, mulatto complexion, became the governor of Massachusetts in the late 1600s. In 1860, U.S. Senate, the most black mulattoes lived in the nation's urban areas and did not want to be too closely identified with non-mixed blacks. As I told you last show, that mulatto women and mulatto men, they brought more on the auction block than dark-skinned. Of course, they wanted the light-skinned women to be their mistress, some of the owners. We got a history of that. But that's well known. How they separated us with a Willie Lynch letter to put the light skin against the dark skin, while we are separating us. In 1924, very recent, a study in the Carnegie Institute of Virginia, Carnegie Institute, concluded that Indians were mostly Negroes and mulattoes. Carnegie Institute, this is their study, 1924, 1923, when they legislated, why you are black. African American is not legislated, but black America is legislated as a law that makes you black, 1/16 or one drop. That was legislated in Richmond, Virginia. Here's one good one for you. You're going to love this. Everybody going to like this one. When you talk to your white friends, you can remind them of this. In 1958, very recently, R.P. Stuckert in the Ohio Journal of Science reported that 57% of all white Americans had black blood. 57% had black blood. And 65% of black Americans had so-called had white blood. Is that an amazing stat? This is
it
a black
definitely line. Shows.
So now you can talk to your white friends. Hey, you might be 57% black. You know that 1/16? But that's part of the bloodline. And again, which before we had 7 presidents who were black. We have 1 is African American. The other 7 are black. And I think I gave those to you probably 4 or 5 months ago, including Eisenhower, Warren Harding, all the ancestors were basically black. They're the 1/16, according to DNA. So if we go further with this, the bloodlines, I'll be doing a talk on the bloodlines and blood phobia, and I'll be talking along the lines with that. I'll be also talking on the bloodline again about who are the real Jews. Who are the real Jews? Blacks were the first Jews. We have to understand that. I'll be talking on that one. They give you something to be looking up and Google up and sort of learn something so you can maybe learn me something. But that's
mm-hmm.
the fact. So we're going to find out exactly all this racial stuff. The first Jews were not white. That's going to be that subject matter. The first Jews were not white. And I'll be coming from a biblical point of view, a genealogy. I didn't write it. It was written. I'd be quoting a lot of scripture and Matthews. I'd be quoting Luke, Revelations. I'd be quoting all these different and giving you verses exactly where to go to find what I found. So you're going to be totally, and this is, I did this research in 2004. And but Mel Gibson had a film out called The Passion of the Christ. And this brought this out, and they don't want to hear this. They don't want to know the history. I know this. I will bring it up. So what they did was when Mel Gibson passed into Christ, what they did was they did 12 hours of Jesus' life on earth. And this is according to the New Testament. So they portrayed Jesus as a white man, which he was not. So we're going to get into this. We know sentimentalism is going to happen. So people believe that color is unimportant. But it's very important because of the way it's portrayed an image in the world today. So I will get into that. And like I said, it'll be scripture written, and they can go and actually get it out. I'll be quoting scripture exactly what happened. And we're going to Rome, we're going to different countries to make all this happen. The mountain of Horeb, we're going to all of this. So be ready for me because I'm coming.
Emmanuel, this sounds like very hot topics and missing pages. You sure you want to deal with that?
Of course.
All right, so audience.
Yeah.
So audience, you got some interesting program coming up on Missing Pages. But let's deal with the program today as we tie the birth of racism and the bloodline. Emmanuel, we have a section called the Breaking News. Now, can you explain to our people, what is the Trump agenda? What's going on with that?
Trump agenda is an agenda that everybody should know. They have basically five components of the Trump agenda. I think it's more than five, but the major five that he's quoting, basically, that he has said. And what it is capitalist rule without restraint. The Trump agenda is now unmistakable what it is. It has five key components. I've looked at them all. I picked out five I thought was very, very important. Number one is to smash labor unions and worker protections. That's number one. That's what he's going to do. He's going to smash labor unions and worker protection. That's number one. Number two, he's going to cut taxes and lift and bow no regulations on corporations, allow them to make super profits and pollute with abandonment. He don't care because, again, the regulations of President Obama to protect the air, to protect the environment, really doesn't care. His thing is to make sure that profits come out of what he's doing. And you got to lift the regulations to do this. I didn't call them profits. I called them super profits. He wants to accelerate the destruction of public education nationwide. We're talking about charter school. We're talking about certain things we shouldn't be talking about. He wants to get a bit of basic rid of public schools. He wants to carry out mass deportation of undocumented immigrants. Well, let me put you on the line up under this. If you got 14 million people here and 11 million undocumented, the 11 million people basically got jobs to a certain extent. At least half of them got jobs to a certain extent. Well, we're talking about creating jobs. If you get rid of the Hispanic workers or immigrant workers, who's going to take their place? Is this one of his ways of creating jobs? Of course it is. Because they said years ago, they're taking our jobs. But you're not going to work with what they work for. You can't make it on that. So, mass deportation. So who's going to do the work? These slaves aren't here anymore. But he ain't going to do no work. He was going to be the boss. Want to be the manager. Want to fold his arms, cock his feet him on the desk. That's all he wants to do, basically. Like I said before, if you're so smart and work so hard, you wouldn't need a slave. You wouldn't need a slave. If you're all this hard working that you say you do, and all of this and all of that, you wouldn't need a slave. Very simple. End of discussion, period. The last thing is he wants to basically unleash a massive attack on women's rights. Women marched last week. Mostly women, close to 3 million, marched around the globe. 640 cities in the United States. They were basically women. About 90% of the crowd were women. So that's attack on women's rights. And they understand this. Do we understand this? Why 640 cities are marching, if you don't understand that? If this is not a mass attack on women's rights? And he's investing some of these causes more than others. His interest in abortion. See, Trump is it's not just about Trump. He wants to represent a whole coalition of right-wing ruling class This is what he's after. Look at the states that he carried. Look at the states he did not even visit. He didn't visit New York. He didn't visit Los Angeles. He didn't do anything in Miami. Then nothing in Dallas. You see where he went. Well, uneducated whites will understand this, what he's talking about, that right-wing crazy that he's talking about. The Trump agenda is to return the United States to the most unrestrained form of capitalistic rule. Back to an era when the rich could do whatever they want. I know everybody remembers slavery. Do what you want. Hang them, kill them, rape them, whatever you want to do, with nothing for the people. This is this guy's agenda. It's very clear. No protection for the oppressed sector, and no regard for the environment. My question to you is, will he succeed? See, that's going to depend on people marching, the class struggle, the resistance. And it's very clear now, and very increasingly clear, that the major sections of the ruling class, they are behind him. But that's what the agenda is, basically. They, again, will he succeed? They want him to succeed because it would be very profitable for them. Of course they do. See, the elimination of environmental restrictions will open up billions of dollars in resource extraction. You understand what I just said? What I just said. His agenda will eliminate environmental restrictions and will open up billions of dollars in resource extraction. The same goes for labor elimination. Eliminate labor regulations. The expansion of charter schools would open one of the largest institutions to private profit seekers. See, with the five I told you is what I'm trying to explain to you. See? But again, is by doing this campaign, these things he spoke about. He spoke about his rhetoric was racist, very racist, sexist, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, denial of climate change was a hoax. You want translating this into policy, what he's doing. Executive orders. His policy and people in his cabinet, the ones he chose, he said was draining the swamp. He put was in the swamp back into the White House. That's what you got in there. The cabinet members, that is from the swamp. So, what he has done is eliminated the, you might say, the lobbyists to a certain extent. So they can't do anything. What are you about to do? He eliminated the lobbyists, the Wall Street bankers, the war hawks, far right ideologic type thing. He had his ultra-rich buddies. I think he got 7 billionaires on his cabinet. This is what we're dealing with. And we have to understand what goes on here. This is the New World Order, what he's trying to bring up in here. The New World Order. Well, all these decades, things we have got in this country, like labor, social movements, LGBT, LGBTQ, civil rights, environment, they're one important concessions and changes from the government which have restrained the capitalist class and made life more bearable for us, for the majority of the people. These gangs are under attack now. They're now at stake. Well, resistance and ultimate revolution probably is the only option. It's the only option. He's the least popular candidate ever in U.S. history. There is a huge, as I do my final, there is a huge power, anger, and willingness to struggle. All organizers, including MPH, must devote themselves to challenge the sentiment and to front a resistance so powerful that it can stop Trump's capitalist agenda.
Mr. John Emanuel,
yes,
when we talk about Donald Trump, when we talk about Donald Trump, and y'all, we put everybody on the defensive. Now, there's a case, a lawsuit case, a rape charge against Donald Trump. Should that case be ignored? The press is not talking much about that case. What do you think? Should that case be ignored?
That case against Donald Trump, I think, have a 1994 13-year-old girl was raped, allegedly raped by Donald Trump. This case should not be ignored. Bill Cosby was not ignored. So why are we ignoring this one? Why are we turning a blind eye to this? 13-year-old child, pedophile. A lawsuit was filed against Mr. Trump for $100 million. I have no idea what happened. But they were unproven allegations, basically, even though they had witnesses. A friend of his was called, I think his name was Epstein. He went to jail. What did Epstein do? He basically did young women for businessmen, and he would he's a billionaire pedophile. So he was convicted. He's a level 3 registered sex offender, the most dangerous kind, a threat to public safety, convicted of misconduct with another underage girl. So we look at 1994. I think her name was Kate Johnson. Kate Thompson. Kate Johnson, I think her name was. But that should be pursued in its fullest. That should be pursued in its fullest. But it should not be ignored. It should be brought up again and again and again. It should be talked to every day like his taxes. They should be talked about if don't let it rest. Again, for a second. Go ahead. And like I say, he been knowing Jeff Epstein for 15 years. So that's a fact. He made the statement. I've been knowing Jeff for 15 years. He made that statement. So once you put Epstein on the witness stand, a lot of things will come out. So this should be sued, should be pursued. I mean, like everything else should be. This should have been brought up during the campaign, big time, every day. So we got an alleged pedophile in the White House as our president.
It's a smooth
We got technical differences. I can't quite hear you.
I know question at least
We got 10 minutes. I can't hear the question. I didn't hear the question again. It's not clear.
What do you think of 15 days in office? What is that?
We got technical difficulties again.
What do you think about Donald Trump's first 7 days in office?
What do you think about Donald Trump's first 7 days in office?
Yes.
Oh, the question, okay. His first 7 days has been very, very depressing. He's a terrible human being. I think he had written 15 executive orders. Some are very disturbing. He don't know the consequences. Let's take the wall, for instance, the wall. He wants to build a wall. Price is $215 billion to build the wall. That's the wall only. See, that's not monitoring the wall. To monitor that wall, 700 miles long, you're going to need from 5,000 to 10,000 security, what he got now, border patrols. How about that cost? You're going to need at least 5,000 employees to monitor the wall for cracks, everything up, the doors, everything that goes along with that wall. You got to build bathrooms. Maintenance people got to monitor the wall. You got cameras on, the lights on it. So all that's part of that wall. It's just not the wall, $15 billion. It's the cost of probably 12 to 15,000 employees. That's a cost factor, too, on the wall. So when we talk about the wall, it's almost like an automobile. When you buy an automobile, you have a car note that's $500. Do you have a gas note? You got an insurance note? You got to have insurance before you drive a car. So you bought the car, $500 a month. But how many more charge of line items to that car? Maintenance work to it? You know, this is all part of the car. Gas, all part of the car. Insurance. So what is your note? Your note is not, your note is $500. But to keep that car, it costs you about $1,000 a month. You add other costs to it. When someone talks about doing something, it's the implementation. After you buy something or do something, you buy a house. Well, when you buy the house note, is the electric bill coming with it? I don't think so. The water bill coming with it? I don't think so. If the roof starts leaking, what you going to do? Sidewalk, the driveway start cracking, what you going to do? That come with the house? Well, what's that you got to buy for the house? You got to buy furniture. Is that part of the house? That's a bill that you can't pay in cash. You got to pay on charges with interest. That's part of the house. That's why people lose the house. They can pay the note, but the things that go wrong with the note, that's the problem. All the things that go with it. Fridge is there, stove, this, that. You got to put food in the fridge there. All that come with it. See? So the maintenance. So the house might cost you $1,000 a month, but the house won't cost you $2,000 a month. See, it's like high blood pressure. Why don't people have high blood pressure? Because when you're making $1,500 a month and your bills are $2,000, that's high blood pressure. That's high blood pressure. Because you're depressed. But his first 7 days has been just awful. He banned Muslims from 7 countries. He didn't ban them from the countries he got businesses in. He advanced the pipeline coming through basically burial ground of Native Americans because he's invested in the pipe itself. That's a conflict of interest. He's an investor in the pipeline. See, This guy is something different. We got sanctions on Russia. He's talking about trying to delift them, trying to make an excuse because he got business in Russia, and he's Putin's puppet. He know what the deal is. He got friends who got business in Russia. Less than 2 weeks, this man has pivoted to be our president. And who's going to rise up to oppose him? The Democrats don't do that? I hope so. It might not happen. But again, Trump's model for New World Order, you can see what he's doing. Everybody can see what he's doing. He's going to cut out programs because he got to create that money for the wall. But I said before, the wall is going to be an incurring cost at all times because you got to have at least 10,000 to 15,000 people employed to maintain that wall. They already got Border Patrol people there. I don't know how many they got there, but in the thousands already. You're going to need more with a 700-mile wall. Stupid again. Very stupid. He's doing stupid things. He needs opposition. It will not grow from the establishment. It will grow from the energy of people. And you better stop.
Okay. Yeah, man, we're going to hold you right here. We're going to stop you right here and let our listeners know that this is Missing Pages of History. Our theme is The Birth of Racism and Bloodline, Part 2. We have been talking recently about Donald Trump's agenda, his components, the rape case, as well as his 7 days. What we're going to do right now, we have some listening audience who'd like to get our views and comments on the subject matter. We're going to take our first caller. Caller 6029, welcome to Missing Pages of History. Caller 6029, welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your question or comment?
Yes, sir. I have a quick question. In reference to Donald Trump's agenda, one of the things your host, if he's talking about the fact that those in power who like the unleashing, you know, the capitalist forces in terms of everyday activity that pertains to working people in society. So when we talk about austerity, we're talking about impact that disproportionately impacts working or poor people. If we talk about economic policy, it clearly doesn't transfer wealth from the poorest sector of society to the most wealthy sector of society. But the thing being that given all of this reality, it creates a scenario which says that people existence is esoteric. The question for your host is this. If in fact the system has been used for a large number of people, working class or poor people, the question is, what options does the system have in terms of dealing with those people that it don't want?
Did you get the question, Emmanuel?
No, it was a little difficult. What's the essence of the question, the major?
What's going to do with the people that they do not want in the society?
No one
what
said
options
they
do they have?
Well, no one said they don't want anybody. The options are already there. We have social program for the options. But again, you look at his agenda, and what he's saying is basically it's almost like a new form of slavery. You're going backwards. You want to pay nobody. Why do you think we have the NAFTA program? The TPP. We have those programs so we can afford the islands that we can buy today. This is what goes on with the NAFTA program. I'm a part of that. 1991. My CEO of my corporation, he was the president of that particular organization. He's the one that President Clinton sent. I was part of that NAFTA program. NAFTA creates 6 million jobs for this country out of Mexico alone. 6 million. What you going to do with that? That 6 million jobs created here. So you kill NAFTA, then 6 million jobs are gone here. See, we have to understand these things. They just put stuff out there, and my thing is to explain it to you what goes on. How many people know that NAFTA created 6 million jobs in America, in the United States? Very few people know that. I'm telling you that. I was part of that, so I know. I work with NAFTA to cheap labor. I can give you a very good example. An air filter, I won't give you the name, got moved from California. Let's put a number out there, making it $3 per. Got moved to Canada for $2.25. Got moved to Mexico for $1.75. And got moved to China for $0.25. We paid $3 an hour, $3 per. See, this is what goes on. We don't know what's going on. But trying to explain what goes on with the when you trade and get cheap labor, so we can survive, so our capitalist systems can survive here. They make a Volvo in China for $4,400. What does a Volvo sell? Can you make one here for $4,400? I don't think so. Understand what goes on here. You can't kill NAFTA. You can add to it. But these programs, you cannot kill the trade programs. That's how we existing today, to afford certain things. Because it's being made with cheap labor. When they had to pay no labor as slaves for 275 years, then throw nobody away and get rid of nobody. We existed. But look at the form of resistance we resisted upon. Discrimination, Jim Crow, segregation. That's how we exist today. There's always a fitting part of the puzzle. Everybody gonna fit in some type of way. They don't want everybody. But you gotta be in a certain box, a certain called discrimination. Live in a certain zip code, a certain number, certain this. This is what this is all about. This is capitalism what we live in. Capitalism.
Okay, let me stop you, Emmanuel. Let the caller respond back or continue with another statement. Caller 6029.
Yeah, well, he didn't address the question. So let me try a different question. In the context of capitalism, let's talk. We're entering a phase of zero growth. The problem in terms of technology is that as it becomes more efficient, it doesn't need people in terms of the workplace. My question to your host, your guest. What is the response of those people, in the society who don't need, who need jobs, don't have access to jobs? What do you think their response is going to be when they're doing it? Hopelessness actually increases.
What's the question? I got a little technical. What's the question?
You're raising the response of those people who don't have access to jobs. The hopelessness. What do you think their response would be?
That don't have access to jobs?
Zero growth. The non-growth in the capitalist economy.
You're going to have job growth. But again, we move into technology. We don't went from a donkey or ass to a car. Which one you'd rather have, a donkey or a car? It's very simple. We're going to move to that, and they got to be able to fix the car. That's when I talked about the wall. You got to maintain, they're going to create jobs because you got to maintain the wall. Just can't put a wall up there and forget about it. Just a wall. So I try to explain things so we can understand the consequences and the implementation of everything that we do. There's always going to be jobs, but you can't have unemployment also. Because the person hand you that check behind that desk, unemployment check, they have to have a job. So they don't see. We don't understand what goes on in a capitalist system. The person hand you that check. How many thousands of people are there? Whole bunch of them. They're giving you a check because you're unemployed. So you got to have unemployment to have employment. To somebody hand you that check. If you don't have everybody employed, basically they don't have a job. That's a big job. Social in a capitalist system. Socialist works. The system works. Food stamps. What is the benefit of food stamps at the end? The supermarket. Without food stamps, they're almost going to shut down just about. Over 1 million soldiers get food stamps. How many people know that? Some of the big police departments get food stamps. They get vouchers. Capitalist system has to work that same money. some type of way. And they got to have wars to make it work, to make war good. Wars, see, you got war and peace. Peace don't make no money. Peace is not profitable because you depend on social programs. Social programs work because there's profiteering in it. Because there's grants, all kinds of things in profiteering when you're doing that type of profit works. $400 billion went into nonprofit last year. Nonprofit. $400 billion. Where did it go? Who did it go to? Those are questions we don't ask. Food stamps are necessary for the economy. You ask the big box stores, you ask the Walmarts how necessary that is. And look who's getting them. So it's always going to be
okay.
There.
Let me stop you right here and take our next caller. Caller? 3330. 3330. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Caller?
Hear me? Can you hear
me? Yes, we can. Go ahead. Yes, we can.
You know, I would like to say, in regards to when we analyze this presidency, I would say that it's a very historic, it's a historical narrative that is repeating, and that's the same campaign that Ronald Reagan used in regards to him getting into office. He talked about how certain individuals were more prone to crime and how he was going to go after them. He talked about a bad economy. And he used a particular phrase, make America great again. And he was talking about making it more affluent for those who are of European descent. So I just want the hope to speak to how Trump used a similar parallel to become president.
Can you repeat that question again, Carla?
I wanted our host to speak to how Trump's campaign paralleled that used by Ronald Reagan in terms of how he used the slogan, make America great again, and ended up becoming president. And who was he really speaking to when he said make America great again? Because clearly that was code as you look at some of the individuals who are in the Trump administration and who desired to work with him closely.
Did you hear the question, Emmanuel?
Yeah, I'm trying to answer his question because it's Ronald Reagan again. Ronald Reagan is something like Donald Trump. He was an actor. He was an actor. He acted in the office. And people basically told him what to do. He had dementia. He put a black pair of pants on with a blue coat. This guy was president. Okay? A lot of jokes. A lot of sad jokes, he would say. Never anything of substance. But again, Ronald Reagan did some things that were, to me, what even constitutional. But what you're saying, at the approach that Donald Trump has, and also what he ran on, he ran to a certain group of people. He ran to the red states, basically, to middle America. They were the ones crying out loud because their jobs have been taken by other people. Are you going to work with that type of money? See, to keep a capitalist system going, you have to have cheap labor or enforced labor. Well, there's no more enforced labor because slaves are gone. That was forced labor. So where you have to go now, again, to countries that you really don't want to go to, but to keep a capitalist system alive and keep the 2% where they need to be at, which is on top of this country, you have to do that. Minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, been this way for 20 years. Can nobody live in this nation over $7.25 an hour? Nobody. Not even $10 an hour, not even $15 an hour, very difficult because of the cost of living here. We have to look at that first. It's probably level is $30,000. Why are you paying somebody $15,000? If 30% of the nation is in poverty, why? We put up the bills to get wages higher. Look what they did. Look what states voted against that, mainly the red states and down south. Because this is what they used to. They used to not pay nobody. Donald Trump not used to pay nobody. With 3,000 lawsuits against him not paying nobody. We have a bankrupt president that filed bankruptcy 6 times, and he's taking somebody else's money. He's not a successful businessman at all. He's a failure as a businessman. If you got to take somebody's money as an investor, take their money, then don't do what you say you're going to do, and just take their money. When you start a university, no one is not accredited, called Trump University, how do you even vote for a person like this? How do you do this? But uneducated people do this. Special uneducated whites. They're known for doing this. 53% of white women voted for Trump. 47% voted the Democratic Party for Hillary. Why? Because the husband probably told you to stay, you're going to have to vote for him. To stay here. Especially in the red states, where the men are basically 85% rule the house. See? California, New York, we only got 15%. Women got 85%. But they do it, they buy the food, they keep the kids, they clean. 85% belong to them. It's not 50-50. Don't you ever believe that. But in red states, it's 85-15, the man. You tell them what to do, how to do it, when to do it. So this is what we got. We got a divided nation. And Donald Trump, he pursued on a divided nation. He knew where to go. He didn't go to California. He knew better. He didn't go to New York. He knew better. Lost by Hugh. He didn't go to Washington, D.C. He didn't want to go there. He went to Idaho, Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota. See? Where people live something like African Americans. Their income is. That's where he went. The coal miners. Ain't nobody using no coal no more. Technology. Get that coal out of here. He preached to them people. He gonna bring their jobs back. Their jobs are not coming back. They're not gonna work for 95 cents an hour like they do in China. 95 cents an hour. Try that one out. Malaysia, 36 cents an hour. That's where most of your appliances are made, by the way. Most all your major appliances are made in Malaysia, go through China, and that's how we buy them. You know, we have to know this. We don't know this stuff. I'm telling you this stuff, what goes on. You make a Michelin tie in China for $10. Can you make a Michelin tie here for $10? See, let's get real. We don't get real. We're just talking. Find out what stuff costs when you make it overseas. Find out a pair of Nikes costs $6 when you make them overseas in China. See, this is stuff that we just hear rhetoric. We don't get no facts. See, I get facts. I've been there. I know what it costs. What it costs to make this. 10 times more when they sell it here. So we can stay in existence. So we can afford it. The last line of the willingness letter said, make sure we supply all black folk needs. I'm putting the black folk in there. But that's what it said, basically.
Emmanuel, let me stop you. Let me stop you right here. Get a call. A 1 minute response, or we'll take one more call. Call in your response quickly. Caller? This one?
Hard to respond to something like that, sir.
Okay, let's go to our last response. Going back to caller 6029. 6029, caller. Caller 6029.
Yes. You're breaking up. Can you hear me?
Yes, you hear me.
Can't quite hear him.
You got a little echo. We got a little echo, but
you got
yeah.
Nothing on.
But do the best you can. I don't know why we have some technical problems today. But do the best you can, Carla. 1 minute. Make a response or statement.
No, I got so much static. I can barely formulate a question.
Anyway, okay, Carla,
I just want to close.
Can you hear him, Lee? Then tell me what he said, basically.
No, I can't hear him either. We have real problems. You got to just come back to them next week. Emmanuel, what I want you to do right now, just get closing comments on today's program as we label it, The Birth of Racism and the Bloodline. You got 2 minutes to get your final thoughts on the subject.
Well, let's go to racism. I've told people before the birth of racism when it happened in the 1500s. It happened in 9 countries, England being the country, basically, the mother of our country, it's still called. And I told them again, want to emphasize that racism brings up slavery. It's a group-based wealth. If group-based is group-based now, wealth and power and controlling natural resources. Those are 3 things. See, black folk can't be racist. We don't control those 3 things. So don't let nobody call you a racist, because you're not. You can't. You can't be a racist, because those 3 things is a relationship to racism. See, resource-holding groups, like the oil, electricity, the water, look who controls. You don't control none of that. Control the natural resources. See, that's with Africa. See, Africa don't control their natural resources. The 9 European countries do. That makes them exist. Because God didn't give them no natural resources. He didn't give them no oil. They ain't got no diamonds. They can't have nothing they can make drugs out of. They have to rape Africa to exist. How many people know that? They pay the European nations taxes so they can exist. So the Queen Elizabeth can have some money. They can have some money in Britain. They have nothing on the island sitting back with ain't nothing there. All they have to do, they have to conquer. They have conquered us and they've divided us to a certain degree. But that's our mother country.
30 seconds, Andrew. Wind up your thought. 30 seconds.
The thing I want to tell everybody, basically, is that black Americans can only react to racism. We only can react to it. That's all we can do. As long as we interfere with oppose affirmative action. Affirmative action has been around for 500 years. 500 years, but who got all the affirmatives? We didn't get any of them. It's a new corn where they put on us. But again, reparations of any initiative to eradicate the legacy of slavery from the shoulders of black people. See, that's not going to happen. Because we are the profit margin of America. We spend $1.3 trillion a year, and the budget is $4.3 trillion. So we do 1/4 of the budget. And we're 12% of the population. Because we bring all our money to them.
On that note, Emmanuel, we've got to stop you. And I'd like to thank our listening audience for tuning in today to Missing Page of History. Remind you that we come on every other week, and our next program will be February 11th at 1 p.m. So please tune in February 11th at 1 p.m. Be reminded also our raffle drawing contest will be coming up on the 25th of February. If you have not received your tickets, please do so. Contact a member. And check out our website at www.mphinc.org. Until next time, let's continue to fill in our missing pages of history. We thank you.